This episode is sponsored by JDAQA Software Testing, your scalable solution for manual, automated, security, and performance testing. Check us out at JDAQA.com. And with that, let's get on with the show.
This is The First Customer, hosted by Jay Agner.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the First Customer Podcast. My name is Jay Agner. Today, I am lucky enough to be joined by Ron Gidron. He is the founder and CEO of Xtype. He's over in Israel. So, Ron.
Hello, buddy. How are you?
Hey, Jay. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's Wednesday, I think. I don't know. They all blend together. Okay. So, tell me, where did you grow up and did that have an impact on you being an entrepreneur later in life?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I grew up on a farm. I had no plans on becoming, I didn't even know about computers. I grew up on a kibbutz, which is a unique way of life in Israel. And you could say I went to university and took some math classes. It was the early 90s and, you know, the high-tech boom in Israel started and this company made me a job offer. And I got a job. This company was called Mercury Interactive. And here we are almost 30 years later. You know, I never drove a tractor since.
It's so funny you say that. I've had a couple people on the show who were on a farm growing up. And I talked to a couple of them, and you never really think about how, like, farmers don't, I think, get their due for being entrepreneurs. Like, it's such an entrepreneurial, like, thing to, like, grow your own food, figure out how to sell it, figure out how to price it, figure out how to deal with, you know, supply and demand and all these different things. And I don't think that, you know, just in the general, you know, thought of what a farmer is, you're just like, oh, it's just some guy who like plants some stuff and whatever. Sorry. It's a business owner. It's a whole thing. Like, it's not surprising to hear that.
Actually, I really appreciate that perspective. Thank you. And you are absolutely 100% right. You're the first person I've heard say that. And I go, oh yeah, he's right. Actually it is. And also, you know, farmers are, and you do it every year, right? So we're also used to, like, and there's a lot of elements that you don't trust that you can't control, like, you know, the weather and lots of stuff.
Right.
Right. And market prices and stuff. So never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right. And maybe there's something to it.
Maybe so. Maybe we need to, you know, I'll start interviewing farmers exclusively and then we'll start a farmers podcast. No.
Right. Like, I haven't farmed anything in many years.
All right. Well, yeah, I don't know how popular farmers podcast. I'm sure there's probably multiple farmer podcasts out there. So tell me, what was the first business you actually started?
So I actually had, I've been in high tech and in enterprise IT for almost 30 years now. I told you about the first job I got at Mercury. I spent 10 years there and then I spent another 10 years in different monitoring software. And I got into the DevOps space roughly 10, 12 years ago. And somewhere along the way, I actually had my first go at a software startup. We're trying to build a monitoring solution. It ended very badly for me. Had a massive fight with, you know, one of the co-founders, and there were three of us. It was a terrible, terrible experience. And go anywhere. We wasted a year. And then the next company I started is Xtype.
Okay. What was the biggest lesson you took from the first go at it into the second one?
There's so many. Probably the biggest one has to do with, you know, choose your partners well. I understand this is not a lightheaded decision to make.
Right. Right.
My other insight is you should listen to your wife.
I would recommend that.
Because back then she was like, are you sure, you know, about this guy? This is so long ago. I'm not going to put anyone's name right here. And I said, yeah. There's a few clinks, but I can get along. She's like, you sure? Right? Yeah. She was right. And
yes, that's good advice. Always listen to your wife. What? It's such an interesting topic, and I could probably talk about it for hours, but it's, how would somebody who hasn't had that experience of, you know, less than ideal partnership with the founder, how would they make a better decision about that when they start a company with another person, right? Like, what are some of the things they can look for to kind of stay out of trouble?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's going to be a hard question for me to answer, but I can tell you about my experience and what I've learned. So a couple of things. One, it took me a long time to get back into it, right? this was a painful experience, and it took, you know, I don't know if it was 7 or 8, I can work out the math, you know, close to 10 years before I took another shot at it. So there's a lot of experience that came along in the way. You know, I can blame my partners, you know, all I want, but the reality is it's also on me, right? So there's a question of, are you ready? So I would probably think that's the most important thing. Like, you know, do you know what you're doing? And are you confident? And the answer is obviously you never really know what you're doing, but hopefully you understand what I'm saying.
It makes sense.
Level of maturity, I highly recommend. Get comfortable with yourself, because it's going to be rocky.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Yeah, I think the older I get, I mean, I have a bunch of kids and I'm married and I have, you know, a couple businesses. And I think the most important thing is exactly what you said. Like, at any of those things, even if your partner sucks, then that means you picked the wrong partner to work with, right? Like, it all goes back to yourself. Like, that's how I lead our business, is like, it's nobody else's fault. Ever. Like, it's something I either hired the wrong person, I trained them incorrectly, we don't have the things documented right, we got the processes aren't there, like whatever it is something that I did not do properly. Like, I brought these, you know, these things in. So I totally think that's a great piece of advice.
I'll pitch in a little thing. My dad's passed like 3 years ago. My dad taught me a lot of stuff, but he had all these sayings, and I remember he told me this when I was pretty young, and it only clicked much later. And my dad was a factory manager and stuff. And he said, you know, you can delegate authority, and it's a very good thing to do. You can empower people, like truly empower them. Don't, you know, let them excel, let them do the things they know how to do best. But you've got to remember this, responsibility doesn't trickle downhill. So it's a tricky thing, right? You can delegate authority, but you can't say I'm not responsible, because as long as you are, you know, sitting at the top of an organization or even a department, whatever, responsibility stays at the top. It doesn't roll down.
I love that. I love that. The framing of that is great. Like, again, I think I've learned more I should have paid more attention to that in my personal life, you know, as the years have gone on. Like, everything is, it goes back to you as a person. It doesn't matter if it's business or whatever. So tell me about X-Type. What is X-Type? Where did it come from? And kind of who was your first customer to get it started?
Yeah, so X-Type is a platform engineering solution for ServiceNow customers. Maybe a word on ServiceNow. ServiceNow is an enterprise IT platform. It's a development platform. It's used by, you know, over almost 8,000 enterprises worldwide. It is a wildly successful company, publicly traded on the NASDAQ, led by a legendary CEO called Bill McDermott, who ran SAP before that. And it is becoming the de facto platform for businesses to do digital transformation. So you can think of it kind of like the Salesforce of the IT world. And it's, you know, it's that kind of a company. So it's an ecosystem. There's obviously a technology base to it, but there's also a lot of people, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of people around the world in enterprises building and operating a ServiceNow platform. And what X-Type does is we allow some very large organizations manage and develop ServiceNow applications at any scale. In order to do that, we solve a bunch of technical problems that have to do with the very wide premise of DevOps. But we do it in a very specific way to the ServiceNow ecosystem.
So who is your, well, let's start with this. Who was your first customer? Who'd you get in the door? Who'd you get to buy in, and how did you do that?
Okay. So when we just started, and this is before we raised any money at all, and, you know, we were just mucking about, we did a lot of talking to a lot of people. We interviewed and asked, and we knew there was a problem. So we had experience with the problem set, but not inside of an ecosystem behind, and we had a hunch there's room for types of things that we know how to do in those ecosystems. We knew we had to learn a new language, get familiar. So we had a lot of conversation. Our first two customers were Playtika, which is a gaming company. They're a huge gaming company, but actually not such a huge ServiceNow customer, and a division of HP, both in Israel, not my cousins, not our friends, so cold calling, etc. And those two were partly design partnership, et cetera. So I mean, it's now okay to reveal this. So the first deal was a $6,000 deal. You know, I paid the AWS for a couple of months.
Right. And
then the second was a little bit more than that, probably about triple that, a little more than that. And those two customers really helped us shape the product and the MVP that we ended up building, and also understand the ecosystem. And our first pure customer with X-Type that is today was Zurich Insurance. And they are a public reference. If you go to our website, you know, you can hear a lot of what they're doing with the platform. And we're, you know, we have thousands of deployments, thousands of releases. They're getting amazing results, and, you know, they're a great partner.
Hmm. So you mentioned the cold calling piece, and you glossed over it a little bit to get those first couple customers. Tell me a little bit more about it. I mean, were you literally, you know, did you find that, you know, a list of companies you thought would be a fit, and you kind of just started going after them via cold call? Like, how did you actually get in touch with these people and convince them to pay you $6,000 and then $18,000?
Yeah. So take a step back. So the step back is this, and, you know, we verified the problem first, meaning we wanted to get very high conviction that the problem that we think exists in the ServiceNow ecosystem actually exists.
Right.
And so when we first started, I actually had a template for this. I would, you know, cold emails is more correct, right? On LinkedIn, right? I would send an email to someone who I thought, you know, would be a team leader, software developer or something like that, and say, hey, my name's Ron. I'm not in sales. It's like, I just want to, you know, I literally would say, I'm not trying to sell you anything. I just want to get some feedback on this. We're thinking about that. And just, and the first calls, they weren't sales calls. They were just, you know, conversations about this platform. We were learning more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also creating, you know, some rapport. And what turned out to work is that our hunch was right. The problem was real. So then people would come back to us and say, hey, you know, have you done something like this? Or you, you know, have you acted on this? And we would say yes. And it kind of rolled like that. And so those first two customers didn't actually start as paying customers. I said, hey guys, you know, we'll let you use a product for free. Like,
mm-hmm.
Right. And then once they've used it for a month or two, I went back and I said, hey, you know, can you at least cover my cost for this? Right. And, you know, and they said, yes, we do very different deals today. Like all of our deals today are six figure, you know, yearly billing in advance, large enterprise deals.
Right.
But yeah, that was the start.
So there's a huge leap, obviously, between 6,000 and six figure. What has changed about the acquisition of those customers? And talk to me about time to close, right? Like, what is the lead time and the contracts and all the stuff for a six-figure deal, I would assume, are much, much longer, you know, than a $6,000 deal. Tell me about how that's evolved as you guys have built the platform.
Yeah. So it's actually very counterintuitive. I don't think it matters at all. If you're going to sell to an enterprise, it's going to take you, you know, months. And whether it's 3 to 9 or 6 to 12, depending on how large it is, you're going to spend as much time.
Right.
And the reason for that is, and I'm just going to ignore the fact that you need to solve a real problem and your product's going to be real and all that. Just talk sales process. A lot of people don't understand this. Selling to an enterprise is not selling to a person, in the sense that you're selling to a group. And so selling to a group is essentially you're trying to get consensus amongst a group of people that all, you know, are all responsible for ServiceNow in our case, but they have different responsibilities and different objectives. An architect thinks, you know, wants to see different things to say a platform owner who's looking more of a business, and the head of development is looking at other parameters. So the sales cycle to an enterprise actually will take you months, regardless of how long you do it. The leap, though, that you mentioned, I want to touch on. The leap didn't just happen. I mean, early on, we were essentially trading, you know, our product for as close to free as we could. We weren't trying to make a lot of money. We were trying to learn the problem and build. So our target was always what we're doing today. Early on, it's just gold. Like, how are you going to go build for an enterprise system when you don't have access to one? Right.
Was there a moment that you said, we've learned enough, it's time to turn the gear and like kind of be more serious? Or was it just a gradual process over the months and years where you guys kind of just put it all together?
Yeah, the latter. I mean, this just doesn't stop, right? You're right. Always a little crazy and you're always trying to sell and you're fast, right? So you just keep pushing and pushing stuff gets done along the way. So the product gets a little better and now, and maybe the customer is now a little bit more ready. And they also remember, you got to remember that these are large organizations and, you and your buddy in a truck is not something that they could easily do business with. So now you've got to set up a company. You've got to, arrange everything so that you can do business with them. So all of that messy stuff happens along the way and in parallel. And I guess the reason it eventually works is because you chose a real problem. So that, and I actually just said that a couple of days ago at a different show. That is the key. That is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Work on a real problem.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, it has become a more popular bit of advice, I think, in the past couple of years. Like, you hear a lot of people will, and it's because it's true, right? Like, a lot of people spend a lot of money and time trying to work on something before they really know that somebody's going to pay them for it. That it's, like you said, it's a real problem that people are like, it's a pain point. It has to hurt bad for people to want to pay you six figures to come in and solve this. As a small business, that's kind of grown, well, how do you handle marketing versus sales? Like, for us, spending a bunch of money on inbound, and we do quality assurance as a service, and we kind of have a specific target and market. So it feels like outbound is the right way to go as we grow the brand and build things. Do you think there's any benefit in doing a bunch of inbound marketing stuff, or are you guys still focused on doing outbound? What's your mix and what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. And I need to shout out to Ralph Passion. He's my CMO and a great friend, and we've worked together for years. So I'm going to say a couple of things on this. One is, we don't have a marketing funnel and a sales funnel. We have one funnel and it all. And actually, we don't, because of the type of business we're in, if you go to our website, you can download the eBooks and, watch webinars and demos, et cetera. So we do all of that inbound, like lead gen thing. We don't count leads at all. We actually, what we count are deals in the pipeline. So we have a very well-defined process that includes, it's very front-loaded. So we'll verify event, budget, authority, need, timelines, sort of like early on. We'll verify, hey, is the person we just met, can they bring us the money? Or at least introduce us to the people that are there. Right? We will qualify out very quickly if we don't find the business tail end for anything we do. And this is not because we don't trust our product or we are, or we're scared about the technology. It's because that we are worried about wasting time. Time is the biggest enemy for everything. So the type of business we do basically necessitates. Now that we're more established, right? We know the problem, we have a good solution, we know how to do the business value assessments, we understand ROI and all that stuff. So, not to answer your question, we do mostly inbound because of the ServiceNow ecosystem that we're in. Mm-hmm. It's literally, we also, we spend more on events than we do on like in a traditional business because, again, we live inside of an ecosystem and we need that face-to-face with people, and events are just great. So shout out to ServiceNow. They put up a good event program. We try to sponsor and join as many as we can. I know it's a little bit unusual, but that's what works for us.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely interesting to build a business inside of another company's ecosystem, right? I mean, it's like, it's probably great for a bunch of reasons. It could potentially be terrifying for other reasons because you're kind of hitching your wagon to their star essentially. And if that, you know, kind of goes up and down, but I mean, for something as big as, you know, ServiceNow, which I've, you know, heard about for a few years, you know, I think that's safe, right? It's like building a sales force. It's like building a layer on top of Salesforce or whatever. Like, it's got its pros and cons.
100%. And by the way, that's an investor issue. Like when you start, like, you know, a few years back, and that was one of the biggest objections I got. It's like, hey, you know, you're solving a problem that's not yours to solve. And then I got a great answer for it. And maybe I'll do a short answer here. I worked at Mercury Interactive. We did testing tools for Microsoft. Right? Mercury IPO'd and was a huge success back in the 90s. And every year there was this huge scare. Microsoft is going to release a test tool and, you know, we're going to run out of business. And they never did. And actually they did. They released this thing called Microsoft Visual Test. Like, we're talking like, no, ages and ages ago. That was after Mercury had already IPO, right? And was an incredible company. And then I worked in the monitoring space, and we did monitors for the Oracle database. I worked for a company called Precise. It was a $650 million exit, not for myself, but for the company. And it was exactly the same. Like, who are you to solve this problem for them? And the answer, the reason I was not afraid of this is because I know this for a fact, is that those companies are focused on their own growth. And that is on the business end of what they do. ServiceNow is a digital transformation behemoth. They will do a lot more digital transformation dons to their platform, you know, get into financial services, get into ERP. I'm not sure, you know, what's on their roadmap, but they keep growing there. For them to solve an internal issue is not, you know, an immediate thing. It's also, and there's another little nuance here, I'm sorry for the long answer, is that as surprising as it may sound, they don't necessarily have the best people to sell this kind of solution. Because again, remember, they're selling to their customers the business and the value of that.
Right.
And they don't always understand how to sell a technical solution for a technical folk. They might not like it, but it's true.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So much good stuff in there. All right, I have one more question for you. Sure. Non-business related. I'd love to say that because people go, well, what's coming? If you could do anything on earth and you knew you couldn't fail, what would it be?
I'm Israeli. It would be peace. To get rid of all weapons, rid of all bad thoughts. And I, you know, world peace is my answer.
You can't fail. So I think that's a beautiful answer. I had some people say things close, but I mean, nobody living in Israel, that's kind of in the thick of it. So, you know, I do appreciate your time being on today. I hope you and, you know, your family and loved ones, everybody's doing well over there. Ron, if people want to reach out to you directly, if they want to learn more about Xtype, how do they do that?
Sure. You drop me an email. It's very simple. It's ron@xtype.io, right? If I don't answer immediately, I will still answer. Or you can find me on LinkedIn as well. Jay, thank you so much.
Dude, it's been great talking to you. Great meeting you. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up again soon. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ron.